Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everyone, to an off-season edition of the Raiders Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Baer, and for this episode, we speak with former NFL agent and current CBSSports.com contributor Joel Corey, who helps us break down and understand a key issue facing the silver and black this offseason and into the near future, and that is working out long-term contract extensions with three key members of a 2014 draft class that played a big role in the Raiders' return to prominence. As you all recall, General Manager Reggie McKenzie selected Khalil Mack, Derek Carr, and Gabe Jackson with his first three picks back in 2014. And after several years of excellent service from those guys, it's time to reward each one with long-term, big-money contract extensions. And Joel Corey does an excellent job breaking down exactly how much each guy might cost and the challenges that face the Raiders front office trying to lock up all three guys in a relatively short amount of time without handcuffing their ability to add more talent and reward more guys in the future while remaining competitive in the long term. We have a very special guest on this week's edition of the Raiders Insider Podcast, and that's former sports agent and current contributor to CBSSports.com, Joel Corey. Now, Joel Corey was a sports agent for 16 years, and he signed some big money deals in the NBA, and more specifically to Raiders fans in the NFL. As a matter of fact, he made John Randall the highest paid defensive player in NFL history, and he also took more money than anyone ever had before from the Kansas City Chiefs in getting Patrick Surtain paid. And Raiders fans will like that Joel also represented head coach Jack Del Rio later in his playing days, and we're definitely going to get to some anecdotes about that, Joel. But first of all, I think what most fans want to hear about is something that they can also read on this week's Agent's Take, where you talk about 10 NFL stars that could get contract extensions before the 2017 season starts up. Two of those guys that you mentioned are on the Oakland Raiders, Derek Carr and Khalil Mack. You also threw Gabe Jackson as a real possibility in there. But Joel, let's start first of all with a guy making lots of headlines lately, and that's Raiders quarterback Derek Carr. It seems like every little step of his contract talks or lack thereof or a frustration or any of those types of things, everything's making headlines right now. And I guess from your perspective, what's it going to take to get a deal done before a deadline that Derek Carr has set 8 weeks into the future? He says he wants an extension done by training camp. What's it going to take to get that type of deal done?
Actually, first, that was a smart move on his part to put a clock on it. Uh-huh. Because the NFL seems to work where unless there's a deadline approaching, that things don't necessarily get done. So there's going to be a resolution. I'll be surprised if he doesn't have a new deal by the time training camp starts in late July. I anticipate this deal is going to make him the first $25 million per year player in the NFL. Right now, he's arguably the biggest bargain in the league. The real question is going to be how the Raiders structure this deal. They got a little over $30 million in cap room right now to play with to do extensions. if they stick with what's called their pay-as-you-go contract model, where cash and salary cap number are the same, that means they're going to have to use more salary cap room than they would if they did a more conventional structure. And the pay-as-you-go structure is something which I think is the most sound way to manage the cap, because you're never going to have dead money when you release a player in the later years of the deal, provided you haven't restructured it for cap purposes. But you're going to have massive cap numbers eventually with Carr. Hypothetically, let's say this is a 5-year extension at $125 million of new money. You could spread out the cash over 6 years. There's going to be some money he's going to get this year outside of the little over $1.15 million he's supposed to make this year. So let's say, using the structure that the pay-as-you-go structure, that they give him $15 million in additional money this year. That's going to eat up $15 million of cap room the way they structure their deals. Then you're going to potentially have cap numbers of $22 million in 2017, 18, 19, 20, and 21 each, $22 million each in those years. Now, if you did in a more conventional manner, let's say same $15 million is a signing bonus. You can prorate that signing bonus over 5 years. So you're only going to use up $3 million of cap space this year if you gave him a $15 million signing bonus. Practically every veteran deal on the team is pay as you go. So it'll be interesting to see if they deviate at all from that structure with Carr's deal, because that's what Seattle did with Russell Wilson when they gave him extension a couple of years ago. Typically, they gave small signing bonuses like $5, $6, $7, $8 million, no more than 10. They gave him a $31 million signing bonus.
Wow.
That's the only exception they made, and that was for the quarterback deal. So I'm curious to see how the Raiders structure this one with Derek Carr.
When you look at other big deals for other NFL quarterbacks, do you see a good launching point? It seems like Andrew Luck's deal frequently comes up. There's a lot of guaranteed money at signing. There's a lot of guaranteed money, you know, for injury and things like that as you work down the line. You also bring up Russell Wilson. Matthew Stafford is still out there looking for his next deal. Where do you see as a possible benchmark, or, you know, something that could be a real launching point for this Derek Carr deal?
Oh, it's definitely the Luck deal, because Okay. Anytime there's a new deal in the marketplace, that's the benchmark you try to shoot for. And don't forget, Andrew Luck got that deal off of the worst year he had in the NFL. He was injury plagued, threw a ton of interceptions, and the Colts didn't make the playoffs for the first time. So that's what was cutting against him, and they treated that year like it didn't exist and made him the highest paid player in the league. $87 million of total guarantees. There's $47 million fully guaranteed at signing, which is the most of any quarterback deal. So those are some of the benchmarks. So you're going to go over $75 million in total guarantees for Derek Carr, and you're going to have to probably get close to $50 million fully guaranteed at signing as well. Because if you look at what your alternative is, if you don't sign him to an extension, you're probably looking at a franchise tag of about $23.5 million next year, whether it's non-exclusive or exclusive, because we'll have the same quirk this year that you have with Kirk Cousins, where the exclusive number doesn't jump up because it's not as much as a non-exclusive. So that's probably going to happen again next year. And then if Carr's going to look at, if you franchise me again, we're talking almost $28 million. You average those two franchise tags, then you really, and that's what agents do when they look at a guy who could be franchised, then you're talking about over $25 million a year right there.
So Joel, we're talking about a big money deal for Derek Carr that's likely coming up. And the Raiders have other guys that they want to pay, including Khalil Mack. That's another big money contract. But the Raiders have also mentioned that they want to lock up a third key member of that 2014 draft class, an offensive guard, Gabe Jackson. Now, he probably won't make the type of dollars that Mack or Carr will, but where does his extension fit in to what the Raiders want to get done? And can they really afford to add another guy who's entering a contract here and pay him enough to keep him around?
Yeah, on some levels, there's more urgency for Gabe Jackson than Khalil Mack.
And that's because you have the fifth-year option with Mac. He's not in a contract year like Jackson is. His contract year is 2018. The question is going to become, after seeing how the guard salaries exploded in free agency this year, do you really want to join the Cleveland Browns? Is rivaling them having the highest paid guard tandem in the NFL? Because Jackson has already made one sacrifice. He had to switch sides to accommodate Kelechi to coming over. So he's played out of position last year, had to adapt. You saw Ronald Leary, a guy that only got on the field in Dallas because Lyle Collins was injured, signed for $9 million a year and $24 million in guarantees. Larry Warford, who hasn't played as well as he did early in his career, signed to go to New Orleans at $8.5 million a year. You had Joel Bitonio getting extension off of an injury-plagued year, actually two injury-plagued years, at $10 million per year with almost $23.75 million guaranteed. And there's some escalators, incentives in that deal as well. So you're talking anywhere from basically $8.5 million a year to $10 million per year with over $20 million in guarantees to sign Gabe Jackson. Now, if the Carolina Panthers take care of either one of their two guards who will both be free agents next year early, that could impact Gabe Jackson's deal as well. I'm talking about Trey Turner and Andrew Norwell. Both of those guys are going to be up. Turner was in the same 2014 draft class. Norwell was undrafted. But at least one of those guys is going to be in this same ballpark as well. And that'll be another deal in the marketplace he can point to that I should be paid in this realm. So that's where the whole pay-as-you-go concept comes back into being a factor. Because if you're going to spend $15 million or more of your cap space going pay-as-you-go with Derek Carr, and you've got a little over $30 million in cap space as it is, and you spend maybe $7, $8, $9 million in cap space using pay-as-you-go, your cap space is going to be gone. So something's going to have to give. And that's not even before you get the max extension.
Right. Now, when it comes to Gabe Jackson, do you think you had said that it's almost more pressing for Jackson over Mac? But who has the real advantage here? Let's say that you're Jackson's agent. Do you want him signing something a year early, or maybe do you want to get closer to that free agent market, maybe have some more guys sign deals, and then maybe your value goes up the closer that you get to unrestricted free agency?
Yeah, the one guy there, I neglected to mention him, but there is one guy who's going to raise the bar. And if you believe that a rising tide lifts all boats, then Jackson's going to want to wait for Zach Martin. Right. Dallas has a history of doing their first-round picks, which over the past few years it's been lineman contracts, Travis Frederick, Tyron Taylor, after their third year. These are all first-round picks out of the fifth-year option, but they do them in the same stage where Mac is right now. So that will be someone who resets the market for guards. The interesting thing with that deal is Tyron Taylor's 2014 extension averages $12.2 million a year. Typically, and it's not the Raiders aren't like this, but in most cases, your left tackle is your highest paid offensive lineman.
Right.
If you're going to stick with that traditional salary hierarchy, then you've capped Zach Martin at $12.2 million a year. We saw in free agency, Kevin Zeitler got $12 million a year and $31 million in guarantees. So I'm curious to see exactly where the Zach Martin deal comes out. If Jackson's trying to maximize his income, he's going to wait. He's going to try to see if one of the Carolina guys gets it done. But the market's kind of exploded over the past couple of years with guards. And part of the thing which works in his favor is college offenses now, with the proliferation of them running spread systems, don't really produce NFL-ready offensive linemen.
Interesting.
So we saw this year that people paid offensive linemen in free agency more so than any other position, and they waited on the draft picks because the guys weren't the type of caliber of prospects coming out that you've seen in the past before spread became the dominant way that colleges move the ball down the field.
Joel, you talked about not wanting to get into a bad cycle of applying a franchise tag to Derek Carr. That's something they don't want to do with Khalil Mack. But why isn't it an option to use the franchise tag on a guy like Gabe Jackson?
The problem with the franchise tag for offensive linemen is it's not position specific. It's general offensive linemen. And typically the highest paid offensive linemen are offensive tackles. So it's going to be a windfall. That number is going to be extremely inflated for offensive guard. Because I'll look at, we'll take for instance this year, that number is $14.271 million for offensive linemen. There aren't any guards who make, who have a contract averaging $14.271 million.
Right.
You're not going to put, and that's, and it's going to go up. So we'll say it's 15. If the cap keeps going up the way it has been, 8%, it might approach $15 million. You're not going to franchise him. So if you don't do a deal sometime before the middle of the season, because after the middle of the season, if he's playing well, he's incurring the risk of injury, why isn't he going to see it through and test the market? Or put you guys at risk where if he's going to resign, he's going to wait until he has as much information as possible to do that. So you can't put the tag on him, so he could potentially be gone.
Wow.
So that is why there's more urgency for Gabe Jackson and Khalil Mack.
Now, if we can shift to Mack here, we've seen defensive players get paid more and more money to the tune of nine figures. I believe that you even mentioned in your story that Mack could be, the highest paid defensive player, a nine-figure contract, those types of things. Now, they have put the fifth-year option on Khalil Mack. That was probably the easiest thing that the Raiders have done from the front office in a long time. That's an obvious thing. But you also mentioned in your story that there are some benefits at times to locking up a player with a fifth-year option with 2 years left on his rookie deal, like what Mack has right now. Are there benefits to that? Or Joel, could you see this Mack extension not being done maybe until next offseason?
If you're going to stick with the pay-as-you-go model and get Jackson and Carr done, you can't do Mack with the amount of cap room you have unless you cut in Austin Howard and
right.
Pick up $3.6 million in cap room. If you cut him, well, actually now, considering we're actually June 1, if you cut him, you pick up $5 million in cap room and have a cap, nominal cap charge of $1.4 million next year. So, that's one way you could increase your cap room. But still, that may not be enough to get all three guys done using the pay-as-you-go method. Now, here's the reason why you want to get a guy who's done – get a guy done sooner rather than later. And that applies to very good to great players, because the longer you wait, the more money you're going to pay in the long run. I'll give you two sides of the coin. A couple of years ago, Kansas City Chiefs dragged their feet on Justin Houston. They could have paid him in the Tombahali range, $11.5 million, $12 million per year. They'd done it going into his contract year when he was missing the offseason stuff and then finally showed up for mandatory stuff and played that season. Almost broke Michael Strahan's single-season sack record. You had to make him the second-highest-paid non-quarterback in the NFL, averaging almost $17 million a year. Could have had him at 12. That's because the longer you wait on a very good to great player, the more it's going to cost. The flip side, a team which did what the Raiders may do with Mack is the Houston Texans. They took care of J.J. Watt. After his third season, Watt had been defensive player of the year twice. They made him the highest paid non-quarterback, $100 million over 6 years the extension, more guarantees than any other defensive players ever had, almost $52 million. He goes out, he becomes defensive player of the year again. If they let him play out that fourth year, and Ndamukong Suh goes in the free agency, gets over $19 million a year. If that deal's sitting in the marketplace, you've got J.J. Watt heading into a contract year on an option, on the option year. You would have paid him more than Ndamukong Suh to get the deal done at that point. Now you've got seven guys who average more than J.J. Watt's deal, and you've got
nine defensive players. When I say guys, I mean nine quarterbacks. You've got nine defensive players. You've got more guaranteed money than Watt.
That's a really good point, and kind of makes me think that there's also another member of this 2014 draft class in addition to Mac, Aaron Donald, who's looking for a big money contract extension from the Los Angeles Rams. If you were Khalil Mack's agent, would you want to see Aaron Donald sign first, and then maybe the contract for Donald could be a new barometer or set a new market for a guy like Mack?
Oh, most definitely. Khalil Mack should be rooting for Aaron Donald to get as much money as possible. The guys who get paid the most money as nine quarterbacks are the guys who can consistently put pressure on quarterbacks. Although Donald's an inside guy, he pressures the quarterback a lot. He was a defensive rookie of the year in 2014 over Mack, but Mack's the reigning defensive player of the year. Mm-hmm. Only guy to ever be named first team all pro at two different positions, linebacker and defensive end. So he's got a great case that he should be the highest paid guy, non-quarterback, that is. So he wants Aaron Donald to blow it out of the water,
right?
Get to $20 million per year, eclipse the $70 million in guarantees that Von Miller has. The one area he's going to have a problem getting to is Ndamukong Suh. All of his guarantees, fully guaranteed at signing, almost $60 million. That's the most anyone's ever had. You've never had a quarterback go over $50 million at this point. I can't see Aaron Donald going there. And the thing that should scare the Raiders is the Rams sometimes make irrational decisions in paying their first-round picks. For the life of me, I have no idea why they did a deal with Tavon Austin after his third year. First, I don't know why they picked up the option for over $12 million. And then they signed him to a four-year extension averaging $10.5 million per year. You put that guy on the open market this year, if they hadn't picked up the option, I doubt he gets $5 million a year. So if they treat Aaron Donald the way they treated Tavon Austin, it's going over $20 million a year. And plus, they don't have to pay. They don't have a quarterback to pay. They've got Jared Goff on his rookie deal. He's locked in at a very cheap rate for a quarterback. So Mack has everything to gain by waiting to see when Aaron Donald gets his contract done and then using that as the stepping stone or making that his salary floor.
So just in looking broad strokes here, would you anticipate Khalil Mack being the highest paid defensive player when he eventually signs his contract? I mean, in terms of total dollars and guarantees, are we talking above Von Miller? And I mean, just, you know, escalating this market up and up.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I'll be shocked if that doesn't happen.
Okay.
Whatever Aaron Donald gets, I'm assuming he goes past Von Miller. And I would also be shocked if he doesn't pass Ndamukong Suh, because that's an interior guy. So he should be the highest paid interior guy,
right?
Donald, that is. So he could get to 20. Maybe they cap him at 19.5. But if he's capped at 19.5, that still helps Mack. And I think Mack's going over the $70 million guarantees that Von Miller has. I'm not sure about the guarantees at signing. The thing is, he's going to be capped by what Carr gets in terms of guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
So he's never going more than that. But the Raiders are going to be in a unusual position, because most teams that have a very high paid non-quarterback don't also have a quarterback that they're paying a ton of money. Only the Giants are a team like that have, because Olivier Vernon, $17 million per year to rush the passer. Eli Manning's extension averages basically $21 million a year. Houston with J.J. Watt, they're not paying any quarterbacks. Denver's not paying a quarterback. Rams aren't paying a quarterback. Miami is with Tannehill at $19.25 million a year. But the Raiders are going to be in uncharted territory. They'll have the highest paid, potentially the highest paid quarterback for a brief time, because Matthew Stafford will blow past that, and then Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan next year, and even Kirk Cousins when he eventually gets his extension. But you're going to have a potentially $25 million per year quarterback and a $20 million per year defensive player.
That's something we've never seen before. So that's going to change the dynamics and the cap. And I keep coming back to it. And that's going to potentially change whether they stay strictly with the pay-as-you-go concept this offseason or even next offseason with Mac trying to get these guys under contract long term.
Yeah, and you bring up a fantastic point that I think I've been thinking about for some time. I know Raiders fans would definitely be intrigued about, because we're in uncharted territory for the Raiders here, who haven't had a franchise quarterback to pay or a truly elite defensive player that's worth this type of money in a long time. This franchise, obviously that 2014 draft class really kick-started this franchise, opened that competitive window. And I know maybe this is more of a GM type of question, but how do you keep that competitive window open when you're investing so much in two of these guys? When you have two elite level guys, how can you still kind of keep up, you know, like without falling into what the Saints have done, where they pay Drew Brees so much and they try to fill in around him and then they end up 7-9 every year? How do you avoid that?
Well, first of all, it's a nice problem to have,
right?
Because you have arguably the best young defensive player in the league. You've got a quarterback that some people have called a young Aaron Rodgers, dating back to James Jones when he used to work out with him when Carr was in college. So that's the nice problem to have. You may kind of look at what Seattle's done. They had a bunch of draft picks that they hit on, and now they've got to pay them all. And you can't keep everyone, so you're going to have to make some decisions at some point down the road on who stays, who goes. The good thing about the pay-as-you-go concept is you're not going to end up like the Saints or get back into the salary cap hell that Reggie inherited when he took over the team, because Reggie leaves deals alone. He doesn't do like the Saints and constantly restructure deals where you push cap obligations from today to tomorrow. Potentially, this team is in a position to churn the roster better than most, because there won't be dead money when you cut these guys. Let's take, for instance, you saw it happen this year with Dan Williams.
Right.
The guaranteed money was gone, released him. That's $4.5 million in cap room you picked up. There's no cap charge for him left. You drafted Conley probably to replace Sean Williams. Sean Williams, guaranteed money is done after this year. Salary of $8.5 million next year, no dead money. It's just base salary. You cut them, that's off the books. So as guys get later in their contracts, that's going to give the Raiders leverage to ask them to take pay cuts or just release them outright. So you're going to see constant turnover probably of guys at the back end of the roster or once the guarantees are up. Another thing you might not be able to do is be as aggressive in free agency as you've been once you've got your foundational pieces taking up huge amounts of the cap. So I don't think you're going to be in a position to go out and set the market at a position like you did with Kelechi, or pay Rodney Hudson prime center money. You're not going to be able to pay guys positionally at the top of their markets in free agency. You're going to have to keep nailing the draft. And theoretically, it's easier to nail the draft when you're picking at the top as opposed to picking towards the back of the draft, which is what the Raiders should be doing for the next several years. So you're going to have to keep hitting on the draft picks because they're cheap labor. And you're probably going to have to make better use or more use of the minimum salary benefit contract concept. The only guy who has one right now is EJ Manuel. And what that is you sign a guy to his minimum salary, give him no more than $80,000 in additional compensation, and you get a slight cap break. You don't have to pay on the cap. You pay him the money of his minimum, but on the cap, it counts for the minimum salary for a second-year player, which this year is $615,000. So say you got a vet that's making $1 million as his minimum, you get to count that as $615,000. So when you've got what the Raiders are going to have, every little bit is going to help where you can save cap room. And that's not even getting to Amari Cooper, who, if he can ever play 16 games without fading down the stretch, and where these receiver salaries are heading, by the time he would need an extension, you're going to have Odell Beckham Jr. putting it in a new place along with Mike Evans.
He's going to think he's one of those guys. His option salary when they pick it up next year is going to be over $14
million. Wow,
you're going to have
right.
You're going to have a very high-priced receiver. By the time you pay him, Michael Crabtree will be off the books as well. So, but still, you're going to be paying Amari Cooper more than $15 million a year as well at some point in time, while Carr and Mack are in the middle of their huge contracts.
Yeah, and I think, again, that this is something that Raiders fans are all new to because they haven't seen a run of draft picks that are worthy of these types of dollars, and this is the new problem of being good and staying as competitive as humanly possible, knowing full well that there are guys that are going to have to get paid. I think you bring up the Seahawks as a very interesting example of kind of how to keep things going and knowing full well that at times Seattle's going to have to let go, you know, of some bigger pieces to really...
Yeah, you've been a benefit of one of them because
right.
Bruce Irvin, because they
yeah.
couldn't keep him. So he's now down in Oakland.
Yeah, so it just kind of, you know, it just kind of keeps carrying on. And I think you also bring up another really good point that, yes, like they draft Conley and they still had Smith and they have David Amerson, but, you know, give him a couple years, see if he can replace that guy, then you exchange a lower salary for a higher one and then you keep that thing going. Just one more question, getting back to the Derek Carr thing, and maybe this is apples and oranges, but you look at, let's say, how the Patriots pay Tom Brady at this point, right? It seems like his salary kind of keeps going up. He never really signs a longer term contract. Could that be an option for them maybe way down the road, or is what's happening with him kind of a unique set of circumstances?
Well, I've got kind of have to laugh at that one because
okay.
fans always say, oh, if I was in the NFL, I'd play for free, or I'd take less money. No, you won't.
Right.
Money is a status symbol in the locker room. That's how players measure, on some level, respect. The only quarterback who does that is Brady, and he can afford to do it financially because he's not even the highest income earner in his family.
Right.
I say this kind of jokingly.
But you're right.
But because his wife is the supermodel, Gisele Bündchen, he may have had to sign a prenup.
Right.
He makes $40 million a year. He doesn't. So I say that kind of half jokingly.
Of course.
But if you look at how quarterbacks, as they keep getting older and how they get paid, you didn't see Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, and Phillip Rivers on what's now their third contract give their respective teams a discount. Drew Brees isn't giving the Saints a discount. You probably aren't going to see Derek Carr give the Raiders a discount anytime soon,
right?
If ever. That's just the fantasy that fans need to get out of their heads. Players, for the most part, don't do what Tom Brady does.
Yeah, and that, you know, it does make sense. And, it, you know, again, it's when you look at a guy like Derek Carr, obviously you can't predict what's going to happen that far down the road. But I think ideally Raiders fans and Raiders front office people really hope that he's around to sign a third contract. And he's one of these, you know, kind of long-term players. And, you know, when it comes to this contract, I mean, there are some people saying, oh, it's really complicated, or, oh, you just kind of, I mean, like, how would you evaluate the difficulty of being able to sign Derek Carr right away? Do you think that it is an incredibly complex process, or do you think that you kind of take a look at that Luck deal, you go above it, kind of get it worked out and move on? Like, how complicated is a deal like this?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because I don't think any of these contracts are complicated, because I dealt with them for so long, so
right.
My perspective is a little bit different. But the bigger issue is going to be whether you go pay as you go or more conventional structure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most complicated aspect. I'm not putting the whole move to Vegas into the equation, because that's probably not happening until 2020. So he would be in the third year of the extension. So he's not going to benefit from a bonus money standpoint, the difference in paying over 13% in state tax and zero.
Right.
So I don't consider that to be part of the equation, but it's really how you structure it. That players, agents don't particularly care about the structure as long as the money is secure.
Uh-huh.
So as long as it's
the same security, no matter how you would structure it, agents are going to be fine.
Yeah. And, you know, since we've talked a lot about these current Raiders and, you know, Raiders fans have gotten to know Jack Del Rio, the Raiders head coach. You repped Jack Del Rio, the player, way back then. What was he like back then? The same confidence and swagger and all that back when you first started representing him?
Yeah, Jack's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
He was a very focused individual back as a player. I asked John Randall once, who was the most intense player, teammate he had. He didn't hesitate to answer. It was immediate. Jack Del Rio. It took him 2 seconds to name Jack Del Rio. And John Randall was a guy who played with a very high motor. Like back then, in terms of defensive tackles, people used to say that the late Chester McLaughlin, if he played as hard as John Randall did, would probably be the best interior defensive lineman to ever play a game, because he was a bigger player, had more physical tools. But John would go about as hard as you could on every play.
Yeah.
And for a guy who went like that, instantly named Jack Del Rio is his the most intense teammate he's ever had.
Well, that makes perfect sense, knowing him as a head coach, knowing how he runs his practices and things like that. Always interesting to hear a take on Jack Del Rio, the former player. So, Joel Corey, we've covered a lot of ground because the Raiders, again, are entering uncharted waters with all these different extensions. I know fans want to know how Derek Carr is going to fit in, and Gabe Jackson and Mac and all those different pieces over the course of the next year or two or something like that. Thank you so much for the time and for kind of organizing everything out for us. Very interesting stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone who downloaded and listened to this episode of the Raiders Insider Podcast, and a very special thank you to Joel Corey, who did an excellent job breaking down exactly what it's going to take for the Raiders to keep Carr, Mack, and Jackson in silver and black. And I encourage everyone to log on to CBSSports.com and read Joel Corey's latest agent's take, where he outlines 10 NFL stars who could receive contract extensions before the 2017 NFL season kicks off. If you liked this episode of the Raiders Insider Podcast, feel free to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.
The Raiders Insider Podcast.